Picture this. It's the classic American dream, or maybe, depending on the day, the classic investor's hallucination.
Oh, I know this one.
You're standing on a front porch, you can smell fresh paint, or, maybe that damp drywall in the basement you didn't notice during the inspection.
Happens to the best of us.
You got this heavy ring of brass keys in your hand. You are the lord of the manor. You own the dirt, the bricks, the leaky faucet, the tenant who plays drums at midnight. All of it.
It is a very evocative image. And for a long time, that was the only image. If you wanted the returns of real estate, that steady cash flow, that appreciation, you had to accept the physical, messy reality of it. You had to buy the headache along with the asset.
Right. But now, let's snap forward to where we actually are today in 2026. For a growing slice of the market, real estate investing doesn't look like keys and Home Depot runs anymore. It
No.
looks like a dashboard. It looks like digital wallets and phrases like fractional economic exposure. It's clean, it's digital, and it's fast.
We are seeing a massive bifurcation in the market. I mean, traditional ownership isn't going anywhere. People still love to own their land, and rightfully so. But tokenization has finally matured. It's no longer that fringe Wild West experiment we saw back in the early 20s.
Where people were buying pixels of a building.
Exactly. It's becoming a standard, almost boring option for a portfolio.
And honestly, boring is usually where the money is. So that's what we're digging into today, the showdown. Tokenized property versus traditional real estate. But the mission here isn't to declare a winner. We aren't going to say tokenization is the future, throw away your keys, nor are we saying stick to the old ways. Digital is a scam.
No, absolutely not. That's
So,
well, that would be irresponsible. If you take one thing from this deep dive, it should be that this isn't a contest of better, it's a contest of fit.
fit. I like that.
We're going to unpack the trade-offs, control, liquidity, costs, and honestly, your own personal headache factor.
The headache factor. That should be a metric on every investment prospectus. So we're basing this on a practical comparison of how the landscape looks right now in 2026. Let's get into the nuts and bolts,
Let's do it.
the fundamental difference. On one side, we have title. On the other, tokens.
Okay, let's start with the traditional side because it's what most people intuitively understand. This is defined by direct ownership.
Okay, but let's be precise because words matter here. When I say direct ownership, I mean my name is on the county deed.
Correct. You, or perhaps an LLC that you control, hold the legal title. You are the ultimate beneficial owner, and that comes with a very specific duality that people often overlook because they're so focused on the profit.
Okay.
You have full control, but you also have full liability. You are the ultimate decision maker for everything that happens within those property lines.
Which sounds empowering. It feeds the ego, right? I'm the boss.
It does.
Until the decision involves a burst pipe at 3 a.m. or a lawsuit because someone slipped on the ice you didn't salt.
Exactly. The buck stops with you. Now, flip the coin to tokenize real estate. The source material defines this as digital participation.
Right.
And this is where the technical nuance matters, especially compared to how people thought about this 5 years ago. When you buy a token, you are generally not buying a specific brick. You aren't buying a square foot of the hallway.
Okay, see, this is the part that confuses people. If I don't own the brick and I don't own the door, what do I actually own?
In the mature market of 2026, the standard structure involves a special purpose vehicle or SPV. It's usually an LLC or a corporate entity that holds the deed to the building.
Okay.
The token you hold represents a share in that entity. It is a digital claim on the economic rights, the cash flow, and the appreciation generated by that entity.
So to use an analogy, I don't own the theater. I own a ticket that gives me a right to a share of the box office sales.
That is a very good way to frame it. You're entitled to the income. But here's the key insight, and this is something even seasoned crypto people miss. Tokenization does not change the underlying nature of real estate.
Right, because at the end of the day, it's still a building standing in the rain.
Precisely. Whether you hold a paper deed or a digital token on a blockchain, the roof still needs repairs. The tenants still need to pay rent. The property still reacts to interest rate hikes or local unemployment.
All the real-world friction.
All of it. Tokenization changes the accessibility and the administration of the asset, but it doesn't magically turn a physical building into a cloud server.
I love that framing. So it's not old versus new, it's structure versus involvement.
Yes, that is the crucial distinction.
So let's dive deeper into that involvement piece. This is really about the trade-off between control and responsibility. I feel like this is where the personality test comes in.
It really is. Let's look at the autonomy of traditional ownership first. If you're a traditional investor, you are the CEO of that asset. You decide which tenant moves in. You decide if you're going to renovate the kitchen to raise the value or if you're going to defer maintenance to save cash. You decide when to sell.
That appeals to a lot of people.
Yeah.
I know plenty of folks who want to be able to drive past their investment and point at it. There is an ego component, right? I own that. They want to know that if they want to paint the shutters blue, they can paint the shutters blue.
And that is a valid desire. There is a tangible satisfaction in that. But the downside is that you are on the hook for the execution. If the market turns or if a tenant leaves unexpectedly, you cover the mortgage.
You pay the taxes.
You pay the insurance. There's no buffer. It is sole responsibility.
Which can be terrifying if you don't have deep reserves. I mean, if the income stops, the bills don't. You can't call the bank and say, hey, my tenant lost his job, so I'm pausing the mortgage.
You definitely cannot do that. The bank does not care about your tenant's job.
No.
Now, compare that to the outsourcing model of tokenized real estate. In this scenario, you as the investor have effectively fired yourself as the CEO.
I like that.
You are giving up direct decision making. You aren't choosing the paint color. You aren't interviewing tenants. The governance is predefined by the management team running that SPV we talked about.
So I'm surrendering control. I'm admitting I don't know how to fix a toilet, and honestly, I don't want to learn.
You are. But look at the upside. You are avoiding operational pressure. There are no 2 a.m. calls about plumbing. You aren't scrambling to find a contractor who won't rip you off.
It's sleep mode investing.
It's also about risk distribution. In traditional ownership, the risk is concentrated on you. In tokenized structures, the risk is shared across all the participants.
So a vacancy doesn't kill you.
Right. If there's a vacancy, the impact on your specific, say, $1,000 investment is minimal compared to the impact if you owned the whole house and had to cover the full mortgage yourself.
So if I'm hearing you right, the expert take here is that this is a trade-off between predictability and control.
That's it. If you crave predictability, if you want to know that professionals are handling the messiness tokenization fits, if you crave control, if you think you can outperform the market by being hands-on,
by finding that diamond in the rough and polishing it yourself,
then traditional is your path.
Okay, let's move to one of the stickiest topics in this space, liquidity. I feel like for years, going back to the early 2020s, people pitched tokens as real estate that's as liquid as cash.
The big myth.
Yeah, like click a button, sell your house, buy a coffee. Is that actually the reality in 2026?
We need to be very, very careful with that myth. I'm glad you brought it up because it's where a lot of people get burned. The short answer is no, it is not as liquid as cash. It's not even as liquid as Apple stock.
Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's on a blockchain, shouldn't it be instant? That's the whole promise of the tech, right?
The technology is instant. The market is not. The reason goes back to what we said earlier. Real estate is inherently an illiquid asset. You cannot just snap your fingers and sell a commercial complex.
But I'm selling the token, not the building.
True, but the token's value is tied to that slow-moving building. And more importantly, strictly speaking about market mechanics, you need a buyer. In the stock market, there are always market makers.
Someone to take the other side of the trade.
Right. They'll buy your Apple stock instantly because the volume is massive. In 2026, tokenized real estate, the secondary markets are much better than they used to be, but they are not infinite.
So if everyone panics and tries to sell their tokens at the same time,
the price crashes, or worse, there is simply no liquidity. You're stuck holding the bag because nobody is buying.
So what does tokenization actually offer then, if not an instant cash out? Why bother?
It offers relative liquidity. Compared to selling a house, which involves staging, listings, closing costs, 6% agent fees, and months of waiting.
Eternity.
Selling a token is lightning fast. You might find a buyer on the platform's exchange in a day or a week. But, and this is a big but options, but exit options are still limited by the platform's rules and regulatory requirements.
And the source material mentions that in 2026, the platforms have gotten a lot more honest about this.
Yes, the industry has matured. Platforms are now transparent about holding periods. They are setting expectations that, hey, this is a 3 to 5 year hold. They might have lockup periods where you literally cannot sell for the first year.
That sounds a lot more like a traditional private equity fund than a crypto coin.
Exactly. And that's a good thing. It filters out the day traders and attracts the long-term investors. It stabilizes the asset.
But there is a flip side to this, which is access. This is where the revolution actually happened, right? Because liquidity might be sticky, but entry is smooth.
Absolutely. This is the real game changer. Tokenization lowers the entry threshold. Instead of needing $100,000 for a down payment, you might need a fraction of that.
50 bucks, maybe? 500?
Could be. Which means you're not betting your life savings on one asset.
Yeah.
Think about the limitation of traditional real estate. Most people have all their money stuck in one building.
You know, usually the one they live in the city where they work. That's terrifying local risk. If the local factory closes down, my job is at risk, and your my house value tanks. Double whammy.
Exactly. It's highly concentrated risk. Tokenization allows for what we call granular diversification. You can put $1,000 into a logistics hub in Germany, $1,000 into a resort in Bali, and $1,000 into a commercial tower in New York.
You're building your own global REIT, basically.
In a way, yes, but with more specific selection than a generic REIT ETF where you just buy everything. Here, you pick the assets.
Okay, let's talk about money, specifically the money that leaves your pocket, costs. Because nothing in real estate is free.
Ah, yes. The painful part, the ROI killers.
In traditional real estate, we have the visible costs,
yeah.
Mortgage, insurance, taxes. We see those coming. But then we have the hidden costs.
The sporadic costs, the ONO costs.
Give me the horror story.
The water heater that explodes on Thanksgiving. The roof that needs replacing 5 years early because of a hailstorm. The vacancy that lasts 3 months instead of one because the market softened.
And in a traditional setup, that money comes directly out of your bank account.
Right. And the problem is that these costs are lumpy. They are hard to plan for. If you aren't prepared, if you haven't set aside a CapEx reserve, they can destroy your returns.
So does tokenization fix this? Is it cheaper?
It is not necessarily cheaper. That's a crucial distinction. In fact, if you look at the raw percentages, it can sometimes be more expensive in terms of ongoing fees. The source describes it as a bundled fee framework.
Bundled fee framework. That sounds very corporate. What are we paying for?
So you're paying for the platform to do the work, management fees, administration fees, asset management fees, sometimes a success fee on the exit. It's all handled at the platform level.
So as an investor, I just see the net returns.
You see net returns. The fees are, in a way, invisible. They're taken out before the money hits your wallet. You aren't writing a check for the roof repair, but you are still paying for it.
It's just deducted from the dividend.
Exactly.
So I might get a lower raw return than if I was a slumlord doing my own plumbing.
Yeah.
But I get peace of mind.
You are paying for the convenience of not managing it yourself. The difference is predictability. You aren't getting a surprise bill for $10,000. You're just getting a slightly lower yield check that quarter.
So again, it's that trade-off. The volatile surprise nature of traditional costs versus the predictable, smoothed out fee nature of tokenized.
Correct. In 2026, investors are focusing less on what is the absolute lowest cost and more on, do I know what the costs are? Transparency is the value proposition.
Now, to make this concrete, the source material brings up a specific case study that really illustrates the state of the market in 2026, a project called Osul Gamma.
Yes, Osul Gamma is a prime example of what we call the mature 2026 context of tokenization.
What makes them different? Why are we talking about them instead of the thousands of crypto real estate projects that crashed and burned in 2023?
Well, back then, there was so much speculation. Projects were trying to use DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations, to vote on how to fix a roof. It was chaotic. And legally, it was a gray area.
Vote on the roof repair. Sounds like a nightmare. Press 1 to use asphalt shingles.
Yeah.
Press 2 to use slate.
It was a mess. Osul Gamma uses tokenization strictly as a structural tool, not a speculative layer.
Unpack that for us, structural tool.
It means the technology is just the plumbing for the deal. It's boring back-end tech. The properties are held in clear, compliant legal entities. The tokens represent formal, legally recognized economic exposure.
So they aren't promising the token itself will go to the moon.
Not at all. They stripped out the crypto hype and just kept the efficiency. For the investor, the user experience is totally hands-off. You sign up for a structured model. You know the income distribution schedule. You get the reports. It's designed for people who want yield, not excitement.
It sounds boring. And I mean that as a high compliment.
In investing, boring is often good. It illustrates the evolution of the industry toward clarity, compliance, and realistic expectations. It's not about getting rich overnight. It's about, here is your quarterly yield from this commercial asset. Thank you very much.
So we've looked at the differences. We have the high control, high headache of traditional, and the low control fee-based nature of tokenized. But here is where it gets really interesting. Do I have to choose? Can I be a both-and investor?
That is the strategy many savvy investors are using in 2026. We call it the real estate barbell strategy. These are not mutually exclusive.
How does that mix look in practice?
Well, you might use traditional real estate for your alpha. You buy a rental property in your own town because you know the neighborhood, you know the contractor, and you can keep an eye on it.
You put in the sweat equity.
You put in the sweat equity to force appreciation. That's your high effort, high reward bucket. That's where you try to beat the market.
Okay.
But then you use tokenized real estate for your beta, your market exposure. You take your excess capital and put it into commercial properties in other cities or different asset classes like industrial or medical offices using platforms like Osol Gamma. This is your efficiency bucket.
I like that. So I can be the landlord of the duplex down the street, but also have economic exposure to a logistics center in Europe without ever getting on a plane.
Exactly. It allows you to balance your portfolio. You get the depth of traditional ownership where you have an edge and the breadth of tokenized ownership where you just want exposure.
What about for beginners? If I'm just starting out, zero assets, just some savings, which way do I go?
Tokenization is definitely more approachable. The barrier to entry is lower, and you don't have to learn landlord-tenant law overnight. However, and I cannot stress this enough, beginners still need to understand property fundamentals.
You can't just throw money at a token and hope.
No. You need to read the prospectus. You need to understand what the underlying asset is. Is it a Class A building or a fixer-upper? Is it in a dying city or a growing tech hub? Just because the buying mechanism is easy doesn't mean the due diligence disappears.
That's a great point. The easy button for buying doesn't replace the brain button for thinking.
I might steal that. The brain button. Yes. If you buy a token linked to a bad building, you will lose money. The blockchain won't save a bad investment.
So to summarize the choice for everyone listening, it really comes down to involvement versus efficiency.
That is the core conflict. Traditional offers autonomy. You are the captain of the ship, but you also have to scrub the deck and navigate the storms. Tokenized offers structure. You are a passenger, maybe a first-class passenger, but you trust the crew to sail the ship.
I think that's a perfect way to visualize it.
And remember, one requires time and labor. The other requires trust in a framework.
So we have unpacked the legal stuff, the costs, the liquidity myths. But before we let you go, let's zoom out.
Let's connect this to the bigger picture.
If the world is moving this way toward shared participation, toward economic exposure over direct title, what does that actually mean for the future of ownership?
This is the provocative thought I want to leave everyone with. For centuries, ownership meant possession. To own something meant you could hold it, stand on it, keep others out of it. It was exclusionary.
Get off my lawn.
Exactly. But are we entering an era where the utility of an asset matters more than the possession of it?
That's deep. Like, do I need to own the house or do I just need the wealth the house generates?
Precisely. If you can get the economic benefits, the cash flow, the appreciation, the security without the physical possession, does the concept of ownership change in the next decade? Are we moving toward a world where we own outcomes rather than things?
Owning outcomes. It sounds a little sci-fi, almost like the subscribe to everything economy, but applied to wealth itself.
We are seeing it in software, in media, in transportation. Why not in equity?
Well, that gives you something to think about while you're deciding whether you want to fix that leaky faucet yourself or let a digital entity handle it for you. Evaluate your headache tolerance, folks.
Indeed. Choose your headache wisely.
Thanks for listening to this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.